is a podcast from comedianscomedian.com.
This is the Comedians Comedian Podcast.
I feel people are turning up to see.
They've heard about it. It's your baby.
Yeah.
And they're far more so than a regular street show where you have to gather a crowd.
Yeah.
This is a thing that is famous. It's locally famous and would be recommended to. If my mum was coming for a holiday in Bath, I'd go, oh, you've got to go on the walk.
Yeah. You know. Yeah. So it's sort of become an institution in Bath. And you know, it was very much, you know, thanks to Arthur Smith and stuff like that. I saw him do one of his.
Very
improvised ones in when he was working at Bath Festival years and years ago. I mean, when he was back with Phil Nice and Clarence and Joy Pickens in the National Review Company, and then came back and did another one with just Phil when he was doing Fiasco Job Job and stuff like that. And I saw that. So that's when I was street performing, and I was sort of getting disillusioned with the street performing because.
Sure.
Like you say, it's this, you feel it's, oh, I can just turn up and do shows and stuff like that. And then once you actually start doing it, and more people are coming out and doing it, in the same way that the sort of, you feel the comedy club circuit now is, there are more people trying to get into it than it's, you know, the right number of people to
bear,
be in it.
Yeah,
I think very well put. That was happening with street performing. And suddenly you're having to turn up at 5 o'clock in the morning to go and sign up for a pitch.
Yes.
Now you're going, well, actually, if I'm going to do that, I'll get a proper job.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
That's harder work than the whole reason of getting into this was so it was all just, you know, a bit fluffy and stuff like that. So I was sort of thinking, oh, how can I do that? You know, the ideal thing would be to have an audience turn up at a set place. And by that stage, I'd gone to San Francisco and I'd worked Fisherman's Wharf and stuff like that and the pier, where, again, it's a different mentality. It's you put a board out. You set out all your crap on the they've got a stage for a start. I mean, that's sort of on private land, but there's a little sort of semi-stage thing that's built out. Nearly, have you been there at all?
No, I've not. I've not been there. I've heard that.
Anyway, but yeah, sort of little purpose-built stages, and you put a big sign on there saying next show at 4 o'clock, and you lay out all your crap on the, you know, so you've got a big 6 foot unicycle, and you know, so consequently, that's why all the San Francisco acts are very. You know, what the fuck can I put out there that people are going to walk past and go, bloody hell, watch that.
With both of my street shows, my double act and my solo show, we would be very hard pressed to put out.
I would have nothing to put out whatsoever. So you put out this sign and you come back at 4 o'clock and there's a crowd of people already sitting there waiting for you. And then you start your show and there's no crowd build. I mean, it builds naturally just through it, but there's no actual build.
There's no moment of horror stepping out to throw one and going, right, here we go.
Yeah. So I was sort of going, oh, God, how could I sort of, could I try and get that started in Bath? Could I be the first one to sort of get that? So it was that thing of, well, get them set up. And like you say, it's that business of you finish the street show and you hold the hat out at the end and you know, people put their money in. And that was the other thing I used to, this was another sort of thing with my weird mindset, but I used to count the money separately for each show.
Yes.
Okay. And then at one stage, I had this sort of epiphany moment when I thought, no, actually, you shouldn't do that anymore because you can do a brilliant show and not make much money.
Yep.
Or you can do a crappy show where someone comes in and drops in a, you know, 20, which bums up the average or whatever. I thought, no, what I want is I want to be able to take home the money at the end of the day for three shows, count it out, go, that first show was brilliant. So that was a bit over average.
Sure.
That middle one was okay. That was the average one. And the crappy one was the one where I made no money. Because otherwise, there's no incentive to get better.
Yes, absolutely. And I think the moment when, to any street performers or potential ones listening to this podcast, I think the moment when you realise that you should put it all into one thing and count it at the end of the week even, is when you become level two.
Yes.
You know, there's no promotion. There's just a kind of notional level.
Right. Oh, he's got his head slightly round us now.
So
that was the other thing. So with the getting the walk started, it was like, well, yeah, I mean, if you could get them to pay up front, then that's... So the walk was designed completely arse over tit in that, you know, if you're designing a product, you should find out whether there's a need and then supply it. And I'm going, no, this is...
You have this thing. You've got to make
I've got a need. Yeah. You know, you're all coming along with me. And Arthur came down, he was doing the festival down here again, and I said, oh, I've got this idea for sort of making, doing a thing like yours, but making it a bit more structured and having bits actually set round, as opposed to, you know, it being so as improvised
as his
was.
For people that haven't heard of it, could you just describe it in the simplest terms that...
Mine or Arthur's? My one is a group of people meet at a pub, I walk them around the city, and things happen at specific points around the city.
Okay.
So it's sort of environment based. The things that happen have got some sort of tie in with, although we do a big sort of, oh, there's no history and stuff like that. It's tight, you know, and they're magic based things, but not done as magic tricks. Yes. So it sort of feels like it's a...
So surprisingly wonderful things happen, there's no sense of setup.
No. I mean, it's a really difficult, and I still haven't got a way of describing it to someone, which in a way is a good thing, because you go, well, sure. You know, the worst thing, thing you can say is, well, it's exactly like such and such, because then they're going, well, you know, it's like saying, well, what's your style as a performer? And you going,
I'm exactly like that.
You go, all right, okay. Nothing against Michael. I mean, you just go, all right, okay, well, you haven't. So it's the in the way that a ghost walk, I mean, that's the closest thing that people have got to sort of focus on when you talk about it. And you know, I mean, relations of mine still go to me, how's the ghost walk going and stuff like that. It's not a ghost walk, it's a comedy walk. But in the way that a ghost walk walks around a city and tells ghost stories about bits of the city that they're in, a comedy walk walks around the city and makes jokes about bits of the area that they're
in. Gotcha.
So that's how it started.
Okay.
And basically, I asked Arthur, and Arthur said, you know, yeah, go ahead with it, and as only Arthur can. And I said, yeah, cavalier, so yeah, or whatever. So I went off, and it's very structured. I mean,
like a behind-the-scenes helper arranging things, or would you rather not say?
I if you come on it, I think it will become fairly apparent that I do.
Sure.
But you don't know that at the beginning.
Great.
So the first couple of interactions that happen are sort of, oh, what's that about? And
sure.
So that was the walk. And that, getting back to it, that's what appeases my sort of...
Need to perform
an ego thing of people are turning up to see me as opposed to seeing a bill of comedy and...
Yes.
You know, And the guy who does my off nights, I mean, I've never really spoken to him about it, but I don't know how he feels about it, because he presumably does feel, oh, well, they're turning up to see something that I haven't created. Yes. I've now become a part of it.
But I think the thing itself is a wonderful, magical, unexpected thing, which is very different to going down the local comedy club and having a few pints and seeing who is on. Yeah.
So, you know, and the nicest thing that people say is, you know, God, there should be one of these in every city, and why don't you franchise this left, right and centre and all that sort of business? You know, and there's part of me that goes,
why don't you?
What? Well, no, that doesn't come into it, because I'm too bloody lazy. That's what I've always, we tried to start one in Stratford 1 year, and it was just, and then you, again, it was that thing of, it got into an admin thing, you know, it was that thing of, well, actually, I'm not really into having to sort out all those
things. Someone who's desperate to do it, so I'll take all of this off.
Yeah. And if they're desperate to do it, there's part of me that goes, well, you go off and do it, you know, in the same way that Arthur said to me, yeah, you take it. And, you know, so if anyone asked me and said, oh, I'm thinking of setting one of these up in Oxford, and I'll always meet them and give them all the information that I possibly can on how to set one up. The problem always is that they see this one now and the numbers of people that it attracts,
of course,
and assume, well, it's going to be like that from day one. And no matter how much you say, the first two or three years...
street performers. And it's like when people see street shows and go, I could do that. You go, you can, but it's going to take five, 10 years.
You know, so... but, I mean, I can't understand why other people haven't done it, because to me... And like I say, I was lucky, because I was doing the street performing during the day, and then I set the walk up. That was happening in the evening, so I wasn't, and I was single at that stage, so it wasn't like any, you know, relationship commitments or anything like that. So it was, the evenings were free, so I'd set that up to do it, and that wasn't cutting into anything else that I was doing.
This is the perfect kind of nexus of a guy that understands street performing, but also has the creativity to write jokes as if he were and was a stand-up.
Right.
So you had both of those abilities and the nous of a street performer in terms of, hey, I can just do a thing.
Do thing,
and
yes.
And it'll happen. And, I'll stick to it and go through the years it takes to make it good.
Yeah.
It's very difficult to imagine anyone else who would you know, there can't be many people in the country who have the tools to do that and see it through. And then you also had the idea.
Yes. But the thing that was great about looking back on it now was so then I started the walk up, and then probably second year of the walk, I started comparing at a local comedy club. They asked me to compare because it was like, oh, you're the funny guy that does the street performing and stuff like that. Sure. We need a local compare. Will you do it? Yeah, okay. And then, of course, while I was doing stand-up, it was that great thing of like, well, if I got a stand-up show coming in, I mean, we sort of split up roughly how many nights we were going to do each for the course of the 6 months, 7 months now, but the course of the 6 months in those days, how many nights we were going to do. So if I got a stand-up show coming in, I just go, oh, well, can you cover me on that night? Because I've got to go in to Bournemouth and do some comedy club. But if I didn't have anything coming in, I could cycle down the road and make some money down the road. So immediately it takes out that thing of like, oh, I've got to do whatever comes my, you know.
Yeah. And it's almost that George Carlin line about, like, it's a great job, but it would be great if they all lined up outside your house every night.
Yeah.
Well, they kind of do. They do, yeah. you've managed to crack it.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's sort of, you know, and I'm forever indebted to Arthur Smith for just sort of going, yeah, okay, well, yeah, just
so
do it.
One of the things I like to... I'll come in again because there's something difficult will happen with editing there, and I shall now write down 108. I've just made it. Classic editing mistake there, but I'm trying to spend less time listening to it, more time getting it out there.
You know, another thing that I've always been aware of, which I think Billy, because the great thing with Billy McCombs, eventually I got to meet him and get to know him and stuff like that. And he's a very interesting guy anyway. But, he, you know, one of his things was, and nicked it from someone else, but it sort of seems to be a thing that various people have said in the past, is it's that sort of, if you're doing something you really enjoy, then it's not a job.
Yes.
His take on it was, you know, when I retire, I'm just going to do the jobs that I want to do. Well, at the moment, I'm doing the jobs that I just want to do. So actually, I've already retired.
Yeah.
And that's sort of how I feel about it now. You sort of go, you know, I still do the walk because I enjoy doing the walk. Mm. I mean, this year, you know, it's sort of, the mortgage gets paid off in 2 years' time. So that's the final sort of, layer of...
For the benefit of the listener, I'm looking anguished now. I'm jealous.
Well, but again, that's, you know, Billy's thing was you put 10% of everything you earn to one side and you put it into property. Mm. You know, that was... So it's all those sort of things that you... And you know, people describe it as a mainstream and stuff like that. I mean, I just look at it as old school. I don't go, it's mainstream. Because, you know, you go, actually, he was... I mean, Billy was a very special case. I mean, he opened for the Amazing Jonathan in Las Vegas when he was 86 or 87. And he'd actually, and then that's another thing that I was very aware of with him, was he'd aged, the lines that he used and stuff like that had actually aged with him. And there were an awful lot of performers that age and their act doesn't actually mature with them, doesn't reflect the changes, you know. So, you know, for instance, a couple of people describe my act, you know, me as the cheeky chappy, you know, sort of it's got that approach to it when I'm on stage and stuff like that. Well, when you're approaching 50, you're not a chappy anymore. No. You know what I mean? You're going, those lines should have changed, you know, and they haven't changed. And I could put the energy into, you know, rewriting a set and making more of who I am now and stuff like that. Or you could just go, well, actually now I've got other things that I'm doing, and do I want to do that anymore? I don't want to put that much time into creating something that I'm not going to be doing for that long or with that much enjoyment or whatever. So you know, the energy goes into the walk. I've started doing cruise ships like 7 or 8 years ago, and you know, to the anguish of everyone on the circuit, you know, I go around going, actually, you know, I quite enjoy them.
Go on, tell me about cruise ships, because that's, I mean, they... Yeah, to the anguish of everyone on the circuit. People imagine, you know, you go on a cruise ship, you have a bad gig, you're stuck on the cruise ship.
Yes.
I mean, you presumably don't ever have bad gigs.
Well, I've had one bad gig on a cruise ship. So, yes, and it is horrendous.
You needn't tell us about that specific experience.
I'll tell you about it, because it's one of the... Luckily, I can say, well, it definitely wasn't my fault. I got on the ship late at night in Madeira or somewhere like that. It'd been a transatlantic crossing. They'd come over from the Caribbean to the Mediterranean. I got on in Madeira, was just doing the last leg, which was the last, you know, well, I was on for 2 or 3 days, no, 4 or 5 days, and they were on for about a week, and then getting off in, you know, Greece or Turkey, somewhere right down the other end of the Mediterranean. So I flew into Madeira, got on the ship late at night, got up the next morning, did my usual stuff, went to see the, you know, showing a film in the daytime, so I went and watched that at lunchtime, went back to my cabin, wrote a few bits and pieces down about, you know, that particular ship and stuff like that. Had my snooze, woke up, watched a bit of telly, an hour to the show time. You know, it's like, I should have a shower in a second and, you know, get ready and start getting into the zone and all that business and thinking about the act. And suddenly it's like, on the cabin door, open the door, assistant cruise director standing there. He goes, "Did anyone tell you that the clocks went forward an hour at lunchtime today?"
Oh my God.
And I went, "No," like that. He went, "They're waiting for you upstairs," like that. I mean, "What now?" He said, "Yeah, they're waiting for you." So, for those of you who don't know me, I do prop stuff and stuff, mm-hmm. you know, and I'm just in civvies. I'm not mm-hmm. having changed. I haven't had my shower. I'm not in the zone. So mm-hmm. I chuck a few things in the bag, run like 4 decks up to where the showroom is, get to the wings. Those you don't know me as well, I'm a bit overweight, so I'm getting really oh God, that's taken it out of me. Guy on stage looks in the wings, sees I'm standing there, goes, "Oh well, he's here, he's decided to turn up, so please welcome." So I come out, I'm just in shitty jeans, I'm out of breath, I'm not in the zone. I've got a prop gag that is my security blanket, my first line thing, which takes about the skin pulling thing. So that takes about 5 to 10 minutes to set up. I haven't got that, so I haven't got my security. Haven't got my security blanket. get out there. I go, everyone having a good cruise? Like that, all this mumbling like that. I don't know what the fuck's that about. Anyway, I carry on. I just flatline. Just they hate me and stuff like that. So it was. I mean, I've never been on a ship where the clocks go forward at lunchtime. You go, they go, and because it sounds really, you know, petty, but because they've gone forward at lunchtime, I got up to see this film at 10 o'clock in the morning.
Yes.
Which was on at 10 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah, of course.
You know, whereas if they'd put the clocks forward overnight, which is what they normally do, yeah. I would have got there. I would have been going to the cinema, either going, "Well, it's a bit late starting, isn't it?" Or, "Well, an awful lot seems to have happened in the last, you know, the minute that I've obviously missed." So they hated me. Finished that show, you've got an hour's break, and then you do the second show, which is theoretically to the same audience and different material. Oh, the other thing was, the first show had gone so badly, I'd got through probably about 45 minutes material in 30 minutes, God, because I'm okay. just like, firstly, there's no reaction.
Yeah.
Secondly, there's a routine that I do, which is like a card trick thing, where they're... they throw an invisible pack of cards towards the bag that I carry on stage with me.
Okay.
And I reach in and take out a real deck of cards, which I then do a trick with after 10 minutes of all this preamble with this invisible deck of cards. So I say to the guy in the audience, I say, "Throw the invisible deck of cards towards the bag. You've got to try and get into the bag. You know, you get a special prize if it goes into the bag and all this business." And as I'm following this flight of this invisible deck of cards, I'm thinking, I don't think I did. When I threw stuff in, I don't think I put that stuff. Did I put that deck in? So I like, you know, look where the deck's fallen towards this bag at the side of the stage, walk over to it, look in. No deck of cards. I go, "You did very well. You got it in there." So anyway, a couple of days ago, like that. So, I mean, it's just, you know, so now not only am I thinking, God, I haven't got that 5 minutes that now would come on top of that routine, which ends this routine, and's got the ta-da moment. I've lost my ta-da moment. I've got all this business. Also, that's eating into time that I can't do that in the next show, because I've done too much of the build up to be able to rejig it in the future.
Oh my God.
It was horrendous. It's the best dart I've ever been on. I couldn't come out of my cabin for 4 days. I felt physically sick every time I walked out I opened the cabin door, put a foot out, and went, "Fuck no, I can't go out there."
I think your current work on cruise ships is safe. I don't think anyone's going to be trying to take that away from you.
But all the other ones are lovely, and again, when you pull into Barcelona or whatever, you get off the ship and you walk around Barcelona for a couple of hours and you see quirky things that you know the other passengers will have seen, so you can do an awful lot of observational stuff.
Yes,
that's
lovely.
Very relevant to that, and also it's suddenly this new shared thing that your whole audience has, not just Barcelona, but just being on the ship and things that happen within the ship that don't happen on main, all the sort of lifeboat drill and the fact that the buffets are open all the day and stuff like that. There's suddenly all this stuff that, you sound like comedy god because you go,
have you noticed this?
And you're going, no, we hadn't noticed that. I mean, it'd be very funny that you hadn't noticed it. And you're going, well, if you run a couple more cruises, you will. So that was sort of, I enjoyed that writing-y thing for there. But when I got back off the cruise, if I've got a job in Portsmouth, I don't turn up at Portsmouth a couple of hours early and think, I'll walk around Portsmouth to see what I can talk about. So it again, it's that environmental thing of the ship brings that out, but when you're on the circuit you just go, oh fuck it, I'll do me 20 minutes, I'll just do the usual stuff. So I think all those that being aware of that, what your mindset is and all those things, that just makes it a lot easier to consider that you are successful, because then you're judging success on your criteria as opposed to other people's criteria, So if someone said to me, you're not successful, you're not on TV, I'd go, no, I'm not on TV, But internally I'd be thinking, that doesn't make me unsuccessful. That's, and my final thing, it's your choice when it finishes. Is I've also always been fascinated by fame and stuff like that. Not in a self way.
Sure.
But in how people deal with it. Whether it's enjoyable. And also my particular thing, I'm never quite sure where this came from. It's obviously from some stage in my, childhood, youth or whatever. Because the example I always use is Keith Harris.
Yes.
Is this thing of having incredible fame and then it dropping away from you.
Yeah.
So Keith Harris at one stage had primetime Saturday night TV show, The Keith Harris Show.
Sure.
His show on primetime Saturday night TV. Yeah. He was the headliner when they had summer seasons in Blackpool. He was the headline name and stuff like that.
Just for any listeners that don't know who Keith Harris is,
worth a Google.
Might set off some childhood absolutely. Fear memories.
So, and then the next year it was someone else's show at Blackpool, a special guest, very special guest, Keith Harris. And then over the next few years,
he became a special guest, then just guest, and then wasn't
in the show anymore. And you sort of go, how, not just him, because he might have dealt with it brilliantly, but could I deal with that? And how do people deal with that if it doesn't? If it slips away from you and stuff like that. And again, reading all these old autobiographies because of Billy and George and everything like that, Frank Sinatra's autobiography, you read that, he had this huge, 10-year period between when he was a sort of, heartthrob, teeny bopper, singing sensation, and the later years, where he was walking around unrecognised and stuff. So even the people that you think, oh my God, they were famous all the way through their lives, had this sort of... Bruce Forsyth, Bruce Forsyth between The Generation Game and Strictly Come Dancing. I'm sure he was doing loads of events, but he wasn't at that level of...
Yeah.
And how do you...
If that's what you've geared towards,
if that's what you want... I suppose that's the difference, If that's what you want, how do you deal with it when it slips away from you?
Yes, whereas, of course, if you're immune to that, doing the work for its own sake, then it doesn't matter whether you get... I did some warm-up at the BBC last week, and I noticed that in the dressing rooms, one person had superstar dressing room 2, and then everyone else had guest dressing room.
Right.
And sooner or later, that person's going to come back and have guest dressing room.
Yes, yeah.
As the warm-up, I'm thanking my lucky stars. I got to steal some Molton Brown shampoos.
it's... So that I've always found interesting as well, and Derren Brown used to live in Bristol, and he is one of those people that I think, you know, he was quite happy doing what he was doing, which was close-up magic and restaurants. You know, this TV company found him and went, oh, we're going to make you into this big thing. They've made him into this big thing. He's incredibly successful, you know. But I think he'd be quite happy if it all stopped tomorrow, going back to just doing his painting and, you know, I mean, he's got the money to not have to worry about anything more now. But you know, he was one of those people that success... It wasn't forced upon him, but it just sort of happened, and it wasn't the be all and end all as far as he was concerned. But if that is the be all and end all, and it happens, and then it starts slipping away, it just must be a horrendous feeling. You know, it's sort of going, well, all I've ever wanted is children, and then, you know, having a kid and one of them dying, and you know, you've had your vasectomy by that stage, and go, oh fuck, I can't.
Yeah,
you know, that was it. That's it. It's been and gone, and I thought it was going to go on for ages, and now it's not. And so part of me, maybe that's why I don't strive for success in that level, because you go, oh well, then what happens when you actually get it, and potentially it starts, you know, sliding away from you or whatever.
Sure. So other than this kind of reading one-liners and getting a sense of it, where did the writing come from? Where did the material come from? Were you, like, with the example that we've mentioned of you've got a peely face opening,
yes,
thing where you've put some sort of thing on your skin, on your cheeks, and you come on stage for the benefit of those who haven't seen it and complain about being burnt on holiday, and you're peeling bits of skin off your face. So let's look at that. Where did that come from? Did you just discover you could do that with Copydex and write a routine around
that? The long story came from there's an old clown gag where you put Copydex on your nose, you put Copydex on a ping pong ball. As soon as the two Copydex surfaces touch, they stick. So you can throw the ping pong ball up into the air. As long as that ping pong ball hits your nose on the way down, it will stick there and stay there. And it looks like you've caught it on your nose, and it's, you know, and it gets a round of applause because it looks like a juggling stunt. And then you stand up straight and the ball's obviously stuck to your nose. So I had done that years and years ago as part of a street thing where I got booked for a street festival where I suddenly thought, God, you know, most of my act was verbal comedy on the street, and I was booked somewhere, you know, where I suddenly turned up and thought, God, these people don't speak English, and, you know, half an hour of witty one-liners and asides aren't going to work, so I better put some, you know, just some physical stuff in there. That's and the, like I say, this is an old very old clown gag from the, you know, 1930s or whatever. But as I was pulling it off, it sort of, the things hung down and the ball was on it first of all, and it looked a bit like a sort of huge bogey hanging down with a sort of, you know, thing of snot on the end, and so there was something about that. And then it was, I think I did it sometime in the future, but it was just, I hadn't got all the Copydex off, so it did look like it was sort of burnt skin, and someone said, oh yeah, have you... So is that was the sort of where it came from. Okay. And then you go, well, actually, yeah, I don't want to do the ping pong ball thing because it's a sort of old clown gag, which, you know, loads of people do. And, you know, there is a chance you're going to turn up and someone's going to do it on, you know, I'm going to say Men in Coats do it. I think they did it at one stage. You know, so that would be one of my things where I'm like, oh, fuck, if I'm on with Men in Coats, I can't do the ping pong ball on the nose. That's, you know. But what I can do is I can just make that, you know, that got a big laugh, that whole reference to it looking like sunburn. So I'll just cut out the ping pong ball and just do the gag.
And then would you just go on and you went on, like the first time you did it without the ping pong ball, did you go on and go, I've got some sunburn, peely peely? Or did you sit and think beforehand, were you sat in a cafe going, did you try and routine it?
I didn't really, no, I mean, most of my stuff, you go, if I come up with one line, I'm very happy. So I'll go on and do that. And then over time, you'll suddenly start, while you're on stage, thinking, oh, well, actually, I've got a topper now. I can say that. I'm a big one for taking anything that anyone in the audience says and go, you know, that's mildly amusing, and going, thank you very much indeed. That'll be in there from now on.
That's just such a gift, isn't it? I love it. And the little feeling of, like, they sometimes might think they've got one over on you.
Yes, you're going, inside, you're like, going, that's you. And my bank manager thanks you as well. So. because that's going to, you know, that's going to ka-ching for the next few years. So, yeah, so, I mean, there's stuff like that on the wall. There's stuff, that there's, you know, I was standing outside this building and I do a couple of gags about the guy who used to live inside the building and stuff like that. And one night this guy went, and I've been doing the walk for probably 2 or 3 years by that stage. And this guy went, oh, and did he invent basketball as well? And he pointed up and there's this sort of old metal hoop that's on the side of the building.
Lovely.
Which got a big laugh, you know, and you just go, you know, fair play, you know, well spotted, good laugh, good line. But <It's in. laughs> on the downside. So, yeah, so those things grow and, yeah, just, I mean, even, you're going to say, well, what's the line? I can't bloody remember what it is now. But even a couple of days ago, I said something on the walk and the walk stayed pretty much the same. The walk's been going for 21 years and that's it stayed pretty much the same for the last 18, I would have thought. I mean, apart from the changing the timings and, you know, words here and there. And there was, I just did a line and I said something on top of it. I just thought, how the hell have you not thought of saying that for the last 18 years? That's not a great leap of consciousness or anything like that. That should have just been, you know, a bit of an idiot for not thinking about that in year three, aren't you? So a lot of stuff like comes that way, just on building it and stuff like that. You know, it's always that thing of, and I don't know whether you found it on the street, but you know, when I first started on the street, I had maybe 4 or 5 routines.
Yeah.
And then the routines were just, each routine would grow to the extent where you go, well, now I'm doing 40 minutes. I'll just cut that one routine and I'm back down to 30 now. Sure. And then like that will grow. I'll get rid of that one. And before you know it, you're doing one routine with an awful lot of, you know, gags and bits of business in it and stuff. Yeah. So yeah, but that and then the funny thing is you've got, you like to say this thing of trying the new material and not when you do it, and my thing is, well, I don't really, I'll write stuff for one-off shows that I know that I've got coming up, or you know, bits and pieces like that, occasionally have a little flurry, but the very funny thing is, and I'm so aware of it now that you just go, oh god, there's not even any point in saying it, but you know when you see someone do stuff that's similar to something that you do.
Yes.
And you feel that you should say.
Yes, yes.
I just want you to know, you know, I've written a bit light. I don't want you to see me. Sometime in the future, you're going to see me is what.
Yeah.
So I would say that to people when they did something that I'm thinking, I've got that idea in my book. Yeah. And I've never gone back to it, but I have got it. I should just let them know that if I did, you know, it's not been. But when you're known on the circuit for doing exactly the same 20 minutes for 15 years, you just get people going like, oh, yeah, of course you have. You know, I mean, like, you go, well, you know, have I got to show you the book? But it's just that thing of going, you know, people go, well, you're not writing because your act's changed. You know, your act stayed the same all those years. You go, well, actually, just as an interesting exercise, even if you're not, you know, I'm certainly not a person that sits down and writes 8 hours a day, 5 days a week. But occasionally, if you have, you know, a funny idea or whatever, you write it down. So yeah, I do. I'm very fortunate like that, and you know, you do sort of have to remember it once in a while and stuff like that. It's, you know, and a lot of it is you suddenly get caught up in someone's other criteria, and you've got to just hang on a second. What you know, you're getting all fussed about things that aren't really. You know, they don't fuss you the rest of the time, so why are you suddenly getting sucked into this vortex of despair and you know, oh god, it could have been me or whatever. But and another element of that is, harking back to it, is over the last 10 years, it's probably 9 or 10 years ago, for the first time I went out to Borneo with my wife, so we're slightly into orangutans as a, you know,
anyone who's seen the amount of magnets on your fridge will know that slightly is an underestimation.
A lot of photos of orangutans around the house. So I was doing a show in Hong Kong. We sponsored one over here at Monkey World. We'd seen Monkey World. God, the orangutans, they're great animals, aren't they? And stuff like that. All sorts of, you know, what's the word? Allegories, is that the right word? Allegories, is that?
I'm going to pull back
the word and the sentence. A lot of similarities. You know, they're like very quiet, very loner, you know, sort of lonely type things, and you know, not like chimps, which is sort of pack mentality, okay. But they're just It's like my wife and I look like, oh, they're great, aren't they? They're so sort of quiet and, you know, they think a lot. You can see it in their eyes and all this. So I watched them on TV, go to Monkey World, sponsored one of the orangutans down there and all this sort of business. Was working in Hong Kong. I said to my wife, oh, we'll nip down to Borneo, go and see them in the wild.
Sure. You
know, that'd be great, wouldn't it? That'd be a nice thing to do. She goes, yeah. So we go down, find this sort of sanctuary, halfway house where they rehabilitate orangutans from from the pet trade and stuff like that and try and get them back into the jungle. So we just visited there on holiday. Went over there year after year. Then found out they had a volunteer program there that you could get involved in and stuff like that. So that was a month and then 2 months and then 3 months. So we work over there more and more now. So now, I mean, my wife's over there at the moment. She's doing 6 months over there working for a charity. And I'll go over in about a month's time for about 3.5 months.
Okay.
So that's working with orangutans. And that is... There's probably another reason why, you know, another nail in the coffin for the stand-up is it is so depressing what's happening to them as a species. Sure. And stuff like that. And, you know, the fact that the species is, you know, virtually on the edge of extinction and within 20 years they're saying there won't be any in the wild and all the forest is just being cut down for palm oil plantations and stuff like that, that you sort of go, oh, what the fuck's all this about anyway? I mean, it's just like, you know, why, you know... I should be headlining at Jonglers. You go, well, hang on a second. You just go, try and get some balance in there and stuff like that. And, and it's, you know, my wife and I constantly just look at each other and go, the world is fucked, isn't it? I mean, it is just fucked because of, primarily because of overpopulation and the demands being made on, you know, by the Western world to areas like that. Where, oh, we need palm oil because it's cheap and, you know, that's a cheap way of, and it's in everything. It's in all cosmetics and soaps and packaging, and I mean literally, you know, I think there's some statistics that are saying if you went into a supermarket, 95% of the items in a supermarket would have some palm oil, some either in packaging or whatever.
Okay.
It's just this huge sort of drain on resources, and most of that is overpopulation. So consequently, over the last few years, I've become less and less people friendly, I guess, or tolerant of people.
Sure.
And to turn up at a comedy club with a bunch of drunken hens and stags.
Yes.
Knowing all this stuff and seeing these incredible animals in the wild and what they're subjected to because their habitat's being, you know, cut down and just really, you know, really unpleasant things. And, you know, just last week there was a report on from one of the guys that we work out there with of, you know, a tree being set light to with a female and a baby orangutan in the tree. You know, it's just really, and then, you know, the mother died and, well, the baby died as well in the end, but they tried to get the baby. But, you know, that it's just horrible things like that. Sure. And you just sort of go, but partly, you know, oh, God, you drunken idiots. You know, I don't even really want to entertain. I mean, you know, and they're probably fine people and lovely people on their own and stuff like that. But you just get into that sort of crowd mentality with a stag night or whatever, or a hen night, and you just go, oh, just, this is horrible, you know, and overpopulation and everything like that, and you go, well, that's not going to decrease in the future, you know. So even all this stuff on the news where they're going, oh, you know, well, we've found this new drug that's going to, you know, save a few more people's lives. I mean, it sounds horrible, but my wife and I are just sitting there going, so that's more people now, you know.
Yeah.
You know, so they're going to have more kids in the future, so it's going to get even more population and stuff like that. So that, again, is, there's an element of going, oh, well, that's why I don't want to do the stand-up, and I don't know why that's different on the walk. I mean, you know, part of it is that people aren't turning up pissed to do that.
Sure,
you know?
People are a bit easier to like in the street, aren't they? Because they don't have the same expectations. No. Well, I've paid my money, and I've got all my mates here, and we're all done. Yeah, sure.
You know, and there's a sort of element of...
It does feel more honest, street.
There's something about it. So that's, you know, that's one element of the street thing, but also it just puts everything into context where you're going, well, actually, it's not worth getting worried about this or that because there's this species on the edge of extinction, which is, you know, and no one really... You know, asked 98% of the population, they wouldn't even be aware of it, you know. So it's going, well, that's, you know, it's one of our, well, apart from bonobo chimps, it's one of our closest relatives.
Yes.
You know, and we're fucking chopping down their habitat and, because we need some oil. We want some oil, that's what we need. So that is very...
That perspective puts it all...
Puts it all into perspective, doesn't it?
Yes, absolutely.
You know, and consequently, you know, the the walk thing now, I see more as, oh, that's a money making thing
to fund my volunteer work
than, you know, oh, well, I'm doing that because I, you know, would be nice to have another, you know, pair of shoes or.
Sure.
I was going to say DVD, but that's not good. That's not a good analogy. Don't look behind you. So that's another element of it. And again, when you see people who are just completely focused and obsessed with comedy and stuff like that, you know, you go, well, that's great that you're that passionate about it, but also it doesn't really mean anything, does it? You know, but it can do as well. I mean, the nicest thing I've ever had someone say to me was at the end of a street show. This woman came up to me and she said, my husband died recently, and that's the first time I've laughed since my husband died. And then you sort of go, oh, well, actually, that's, you know, that is what comedy can be, and that is a, you know, a valid side of it.
Sure.
But how often is it that, and how often is it just, well, where should we go for our stag night this week? Well, fuck, should we have a laugh? Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's a disco afterwards.
Yeah.
There's some comedians on before the disco. We want to go to a disco.
Yeah.
You might as well go to this one. I've got some comedians on beforehand.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So, although I'm happy, I'm despondent at the same time.
Well, that seems as good a place as any to leave it. I don't know how I'm going to edit this. We've got 2 hours and 10 minutes now, which is twice as much as I normally get. But right. That's fascinating. Well, I've really enjoyed that. Thank you.
My pleasure. I'm sure you'll cut out all the dross and you'll be left with 10 minutes.